Welcome to UCCF's Christian Persuaders podcast, a series of interviews with people from around the world, gifted and passionate about communicating and defending the Christian gospel. For more information about UCCF, Christian Persuaders, and more episodes from this podcast, do go to uccf.org.uk/Christian-Persuaders. Well, today we're talking with Doug Groteis, who is the author of Truth Decay, Defending Christianity Against the Challenges of Postmodernism, and who's also recently published In Defense of Natural Theology. And we're going to find out a bit about his approach when speaking in public settings to believers and non-believers. Now, you're a professor of philosophy in Denver, Summer, is that correct?
Correct.
And does that give you opportunities to go and speak at other university settings?
Well, the credential and the position opens the door. Having a doctoral degree in philosophy and being a professor gives you a kind of platform in certain settings. It doesn't mean people are pounding down my door asking me for lectures, but I look for the possibilities, particularly in secular settings.
So
recently I've done several outreach talks at a school called the Auraria Campus, which is several schools in downtown Denver.
Okay.
So I give a talk that I think will be of interest to the non-Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I work with a campus group who will promote the event, pray for the event. That's crucial that it be covered in prayer. And I always speak to a topic that I have some knowledge of and mm-hmm. some passion for.
Okay.
And something that is pertinent to some of the issues of the day. So, for example, in the fall term of 2009, I gave two outreach talks. One of them was called A Christian View of Gender. That was for the Metro State Philosophy Club. So I developed a biblical understanding of gender, that we're made in the image and likeness of God, that mm-hmm. men are not above women. Men and women are both in need of redemption. They can be used for the purposes of God, and so on, and answered questions. I also gave a more critical talk challenging some of the aspects of Darwinism.
Okay.
It was called The Deniable Darwin. And I gave some intelligent design arguments challenging the naturalism of Darwinism as insufficient to explain certain parts of the biological world. So my philosophy is, first of all, to have a sense of calling, that I'm competent to deal with the area.
Uh-huh.
The last thing I want to do is dishonor Christ in public by being an ignoramus or by being somehow unprepared for the topic. It has to be well supported by prayer.
Uh-huh.
It has to be promoted by an indigenous campus group. I don't just show up and expect people to listen to me. Another part of my philosophy of outreach is to give people material to take home besides what I tell them. So I always use a very detailed outline, point-by-point outline, and on that outline I always include a bibliography, oftentimes annotated, which may include references to DVDs, web pages, and so on. So I want to leave them with something they can dig into at a later point. I try to be very clear. I don't try to do everything. I try to focus the topic very carefully. And I leave a lot of time for question and answer formally. And then informally, my philosophy is to be the last one out of the room, literally. Because I think it gives a very bad message to give a talk and then quickly scurry away. I view myself as the pastor of the evening, so to speak.
Okay.
So I want to talk to anyone who has a question or who wants to make a comment. And I found out over the years that a lot of very significant ministry happens in that informal time.
Mm-hmm.
Because some people are too timid to speak up publicly, but they will ask some very penetrating questions one-on-one.
What kind of questions have you faced recently? What are the popular ones you come across?
Well, I did another event, actually, that was almost entirely question-answer.
Okay.
I talk for about 12 to 15 minutes on why I am a Christian, and then I fielded questions for about an hour and a half. And the questions run in some predictable patterns. The problem of evil mm-hmm. usually comes up in one form or another. Something about the reliability of the Bible, or the pertinence of the Bible, an ancient book, how is it to apply today? I've had questions on the relationship of Christianity and science.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes questions about particular biblical teachings. I recently had a question about how do we pray the imprecatory Psalms, How do we pray a Psalm of David where he's calling down wrath on his enemies when Jesus says to love your enemies?
And what did he say to that one?
Well, it was brilliant, of course, but I had thought about that over the years, and I said that the Psalms allow the psalmist to reveal the full expression of emotion.
Okay.
And yes, as New Testament, New Covenant Christians, we should pray for our enemies, but we still have to realize we have these feelings of desiring justice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way we can pray them is, yes, God, we want these people to convert. Please convert them. But if they don't convert, and if they're evildoers, then I think God has a right to judge them. And I think we can pray that.
Okay.
So I said something to that effect, to that question.
Now, so you're a Christian philosopher, and you've been a Christian for a number of years.
34 years.
34 years, and he looks about 35, so he must have been a young Christian. Now, in those kind of dark nights of the soul, what do you hold on to? What is the reason for the hope that you have?
Well, some people will say that when the arguments give out, they rely on their Christian experience, the sense of God's presence in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
That has not been so much the case for me. It's actually been more the opposite.
Okay.
When I experience a time of dryness or difficulty as a Christian, I often go back to the arguments. This is true.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most coherent, cogent worldview available. I've been studying this for decades. I've read the atheists, I've read the Buddhists, I've read the Hindus, I've read the Muslims. Not all, of course, but a significant amount. And this conception, this perspective of life works intellectually. And it also gives meaning to suffering.
Okay.
Suffering is not meaningless. The Lord of the universe hung on a cross and said, my God, why have you forsaken me? But existentially, I find great wisdom and great solace in the Psalms.
Mm-hmm. Now, I imagine some people might be thinking, surely philosophers are the really smart ones who don't believe in God. Has that been your experience?
Well, some do and some don't. Some of the most brilliant philosophers today are theists and Christian theists. Alvin Plantinga, Richard Swinburne, for example. And we have some very bright philosophers who are atheists. But I think the ultimate question is whether Christianity holds up in the world of ideas, and I believe that it does.
Okay. Now, are you working on a new book, or what's in the pipeline for you?
Well, about 7 years ago, I started an apologetics textbook that took a lot longer than I thought and became a lot larger than I expected. It's called What Matters Most. And I have submitted that to the publishers, and I'm waiting for the reviewer reports of that book right now. That attempts to be a comprehensive defense of Christianity.
Hmm.
I do not want to write another large book. I have some ideas for future books, but they would be much smaller, Lord willing.
And what was the reason behind this book? Why do you think this is an important topic, or I guess the book itself? What's the rationale behind it?
There's an apologetic mandate given to the church to have a reason for the hope within us and to present this with gentleness and respect to those who ask us, 1 Peter 3:15. And it has been a discipline I've engaged in for many years. I've taught it at the seminary level. I have given apologetic talks in various places around the United States for many, many years. And it's really at the heartbeat of my own passion for ministry.
Okay.
And teaching apologetics at Denver Seminary, I find that I have to use 5, 6, or 7 books to cover the topic adequately, much to the horror, of course, of my students, and to their shock and surprise when they go into the bookstore.
Yeah.
And they say to the bookstore manager, surely this is for 3 or 4 classes, not just for one. So I decided, having taught apologetics for about 10 years, that I should write my own textbook that does pretty much everything I think an apologetics textbook should do.
Hmm.
So that's really why it became so long, so big.
And is this a culmination of your work and life for the last 20 years or so?
Yes, I think in many ways it expresses what's at the heart of my calling and my studies, really for the last 30 years.
Now, if you had written this book 20 years ago, would it be different?
It would be worse. Yes.
But I mean, has your we can probably assume that has your apologetic method changed, or your approach, or your priorities?
Not really.
Okay.
I use the same approach, which is called the cumulative case method.
Mm-hmm.
You argue for Christian theism from a number of lines of evidence, and you compare Christian theism with other worldviews, to use the most basic categories of internal consistency, external conformity to fact,
mm-hmm.
and livability or existential viability. Those are the three main criteria to use, I think, in assessing worldviews. I get more complicated than that in the book, but that's been my essential method for a long time.
Right. Now, final question. So you mentioned if you're doing these kind of presentations, you give out detailed handouts with bibliography and resources. Are there any particular resources you think would be helpful for us?
Well, I like to give essays, apologetic essays.
Okay.
This recent question and answer talk I did on the Aurelia campus in Denver, I supplied a number of essays that I had written on apologetics, I think 10 or 12, and they gobbled them all up, and I was delighted at that because I wanted people to go home and read something, sink their teeth into something. There was a website that was up for several years called True You, which featured many, many apologetic essays of about 1,000 to 2,000 words long. And I wrote 10 essays for that webpage. Sadly, the webpage no longer exists. But I had the PDF files of these essays, so I copied a number of them and made them available. And they dealt with a variety of topics. Is Jesus the only way? And so on. And made those available. And some other shorter essays from other apologists.
And where are they available nowadays?
Well, they're available on the Denver Seminary webpage.
Okay.
We have, I think, 9 of those 10 essays of mine. They're not too hard to find on the Denver Seminary webpage. And those can be used by anyone as they wish, as long as they preserve the integrity of the document. They're free. They're available for use on webpages to give to people for any legitimate use, apologetic use.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for talking to us, and we look forward to this book coming out. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of UCCF's Christian Persuaders podcast. For more information, go to uccf.org.uk.